and welcome to another edition of Kaleidoscope. This is Mike Zendon, recording from Nicosia, and with me now in Nicosia I have Natasa Loeso, who's a research consultant in military and security affairs and who actually lives in Argentina. Welcome, Natasa.
Hello, Magda. How are you?
Well, Natasa, it's actually good to see you after so many years, because I haven't seen you since you, I think I might have seen you once or twice, but you emigrated to Argentina in 2006.
Yeah, that's right. It's been 18 years.
A big decision and far away. How easy was that decision to make?
Well, you've known me. I've always been a dreamer. I believe in love. So it was easy enough, because if one of the most strongest emotions in the world make you feel so secure to be with another person and to create something new, your own way to integrate your desires and what your wishes, your hopes, etc. Well, that makes it easy to decide, at least. Then the process of making that new thing, it's a whole different discussion. Of course, nothing is easy in people's lives. You know, everyone says to me, are you sure you're going to do that? Because it's difficult. So my normal response is there anything in life that is easy?
I totally agree with you. Everything is hard. I think the thing that I found a challenge in my mind is that Argentina is very far from Cyprus. So you might get trapped, which is something that happened to me, and that's why I thought of it. Okay, I didn't thought. Anyway, so you took the decision, and I agree with you. There's no stronger emotion than love, and that's the emotion that should actually guide us. Okay, so you moved to Argentina. Who are you in Argentina? How do you keep your identity, if you want to, as a Cypriot and as a woman? I think it's a process.
First of all, I got in Argentina, I proposed to my husband. I met him here in Cyprus. He's a military officer for the Air Force of the Argentina Republic. And I met him while he was here serving in the UNFISIP mission. So it was very interesting how we got to meet and to take the decision to be together. So I proposed 3 times. He accepted on the 3rd time. So basically, he had more challenges to face than myself.
He played hard to get.
Yeah. So I got my stuff and I went to Argentina. And I didn't speak Spanish. So in a country that speaks Spanish and not many people speak English, that's a huge challenge, because I needed to communicate like every other human being. But myself, as a political animal, I needed to understand more than another person that just goes for tourism or just to, you know, let's go with the flow.
You needed to understand, speak Spanish. They could understand who the people you were living with were as well, not just to get by and buy groceries or
exactly. So I fundamentally needed to survive while living with my mother-in-law. So basically, I had to, you know, go through that situation of getting to live with other people that didn't know me, and I was presented to them, you know, like, here is my wife. So I had the emergency of learning Spanish. So I went through that. I learned by myself. I had a method. I bought a pocket dictionary and I started, you know, finding words. I interacted with my mother-in-law. And
so you actually didn't go for lessons. You learned by yourself.
I learned by myself.
Wow. Awesome.
And I asked my husband to get me a subtitled movies or series of history in order for me to, you know, do two things in one, learn Latin American history and learn Spanish. So I started doing that like a full-time job. And then I started reading in Spanish. So basically I created my own vocabulary, and that took me into, okay, I want to go out in the street and start, you know, interacting with other people. And I went to the veggie store and the to buy meat, etc. So I had, you know, my shop vocabulary.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
Why didn't you go the easy way of actually starting with a teacher?
Because for me, it was not the easy way. Because they wanted, I did actually, but they wanted to teach me, you know, the normal way. Like, you know, this is the vocab, this is the alphabet, and these are the
commonly used the verbs.
Yeah, the verbs, et cetera, et cetera. And I was like, you know, I really need to speak. So
now
I need to go fast, because it's a survival. It's not learning a language in order to have it in my CV and use it in some moment in my life. It's just, I just need to do it now. So using my knowledge in English and Greek, I started, you know, thinking, okay, if I mix a little bit of that and a little bit of that, I can make phrases. So basically I started mixing my three languages. So why do I say this to you? What does that have to do with my identity? Because I didn't speak well, and I, you know, people saw me taking my dictionary out and looking for words, etc. So everyone started asking me, so where are you from? So I said, Cyprus. What is Cyprus? Cyprus,
okay.
Cyprus. In Spanish, it's called Chipre. So there was a need to make them understand, then to explain to them where is Cyprus. So, you know, people in the other side of the world don't know where Cyprus is. So I started explaining to them where is Cyprus. So they say, ah, okay, so you're from the country of Baghdad, this and that. And I say, yes, okay. So why did you come here? Well, you know, I met my husband. So why there are military in Cyprus? So I said, okay, that's a huge opportunity. I can get Cyprus to be known.
Get the message across.
And get the message across, you know, the big Atlantic. And I started talking about me. I was generating the conditions for people to ask me where I was from, just for the objective to be accomplished, to get myself talk about Cyprus. So this is how I constructed my identity as Cypriot in Buenos Aires. And when I started getting involved in politics.
Sorry, Natasha, how long did it take you before you felt fairly confident to walk in the street and speak? And I'm saying fairly confident. I'm not saying, because I think every language we learn as we go along anyway.
At the 8 months, approximately, or 10 months, I could understand most of it. And I could kind of speak, and people could actually understand me, making a lot of effort for understanding me. But at around the 8th or 10th months, I could just go around and communicate. So I was taking the train and the buses to and went all across their journey in order to get to know the city of Buenos Aires, because after that I would have to go on the employment issue, right?
You actually did this on such a multidimensional level.
Because
you you needed to learn the language, you wanted to learn the history, and you needed to meet to learn the city, to discover the city. Wow, and you did this in 8 or 10 months.
I did that in, and I was pregnant already. So another identity came in, you know. So what am I doing here? in Argentina in a house with my mother-in-law, and I cannot work because I don't speak the language. I don't really understand, you know, the system. So who is going to contract me? So I said, okay, there is another challenge for myself to, you know, be a mother. So I was walking around with my pregnant belly, that which was another challenge because my mother-in-law was really afraid of something happening to me or getting lost, etc., etc. So basically, I had to explain to her that I was not a woman that had fears of, you know, challenging life. So,
or of discovering a city and perhaps getting lost, but getting found again, but of finding my way again.
Yeah, exactly. So I started visiting museums, and you know, I mean, cities have their own history, and especially the city of Buenos Aires is a city where the May Revolution started for the independence of Argentina, but not only for of Argentina, but also for Chile, what today is Chile, Uruguay, Brazil, and the rest of Latin America, because there were two great men at that time, which was José de San Martín and Bolívar, who one started from the south and the other one from the north. Okay. So they were the revolution, the generation of the revolution in Latin America, which was, it is a very fascinating story, unknown to most Europeans. Yeah. So I started going around that. So that helped me getting to understand the politics and the economics and why this concentration of people in Buenos Aires. So, you know, I was starting to become an active citizen, which led me to, okay, I want to understand the politics now.
And that's a challenge, because I remember moving to Cyprus in 2000. And I mean, I come from a history, I'm South African born. I'm the diaspora, but I lived through the events with my parents. And I stepped into Cyprus working at a newspaper. And I thought, no, getting into the politics directly is a challenge, because there's so many high emotions. That's why I got into women's rights, because I thought, you know, by getting into women's rights and women in peace building, it was like getting through the side door of not discussing conflict per se, because everyone's right and everyone's wrong. And I learned at the side, to me, it was easier to learn it the sideways.
Yes.
I found it safer for me, but we all do things in a. It was easier for me to also understand the politics if I went in the side door, because I entered on a softer level, and then I could get into the politics, the real politics, which is controversial anyway. It takes time.
It takes time, and not forget that, well, you know, politics, it's normally a man's world or a man's place. So it was already hard for me, because I had to show that, okay, I was a foreigner, but I had the conviction of living in Argentina. Then I said, okay, they're going to ask me about history facts to get to know, you know. And Argentina has a lot of conspiracy history.
Yes. The whole of South America
yeah.
has a different levels of the conflict.
Well, yeah, you know, because a lot of things happened. It's a soil of a lot of turmoil. Mm. So so I said, okay, maybe they think that I am a spy or something, you know, so I have to know my stuff before getting involved. So I started being a very active observator of the elections and the politics and the parliament and understanding what was going on. There was a new government in 2007 and 2003, And then I was in Argentina when the 2007 elections occurred and Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner became elected as a candidate from the Peronist movement, which is a very it is the popular movement in Argentina, created by General Juan Domingo Perón and Evita Perón in the 50s. And so I had to go from my leftist, that's another identity issue. I had to go from my leftist Marxist mentality or mindset to understand Latin American politics from a very popular
perspective.
Perspective, and to understand the role of the left in Argentina in a very diverse and really multiple actors. You know, there are very so many organizations and parties, and you know, it's not the simple politics we have here. You know, we have a right-wing party, a left-wing party, an environmentalist, let's say, and two or three in the middle. You have, you know, a diversity of political parties. You have movements. The feminist movement is huge and also very diverse, from the right to the left. The originals taking part. So it was a huge challenge for me to, first of all, understand it, respect it, and to
and then place yourself in it.
Yeah, place myself in it. But how do you place yourself in it if you have these, you know, glasses of the European left wing progressive citizen? Then, you know, yes, of course, it's easy for you to have moral and ethical criticism of how people in other places of the world take decisions and how they organize, etc. So part of my decision was, if I want to fit in this place and make it mine, because at that moment, as I told you, I was becoming a mother, my kids are going to get born here and live here. So come on, I have to be a part of this. And I needed to continue what I started in Cyprus, you know, I mean, participating actively in the important causes that have to do with our country, with the feminist movement, with the bicommunal movement, with the most progressive policies, and defending the causes of the people. So I wanted to continue that. So basically, what I am saying to you is that the desire of becoming part of something did not mean that I eliminated one part of my eliminated my original identity. On the contrary, I had to, like, you know, when I started going to these political meetings, I had to say who I was. So
no, but that's what I was going to say to you, that regardless of where you are, you take yourself with you. Because I mean, I left as an apartheid South Africa. I'd moved to Greece for a while and then to Cyprus, but I'd left an apartheid South Africa in which I was very active in the anti-apartheid movement. I came to Cyprus and I stepped into this political arena because, like you, I'm also a political animal. You don't lose your moral compass. You just try to readjust it in a way that you can fit in, that it fits into the context where you are. You learn to use different words, but your moral compass, if you're a strong political animal like you and I both are, you never lose that moral compass. You never lose who you were, because then you've lost yourself.
Yes.
Then you've lost yourself. But can
you
we
lose
go
your
on?
Path. You lose your path, you know. It's like you get lost in crossroads. So I didn't
and,
want to get lost.
And when you're moving to another country, the one thing that should be the constant is who I am.
Yes.
But let's move on. You've got a degree in international relations and international security. And your career path in Argentina is quite fantabulous, if I can say that, because you actually reached positions no other woman has reached, and you reached them in the sector of military security and that context, which is so not feminine or female. Tell me about that.
Well, I did my BA in Kent, in England. I studied in the UK, so that was another experience, a great experience. I challenged my family's decision. I am coming from an accountant's family, so I am the oldest daughter. So supposedly I should,
have been an accountant.
Follow the professor, the profession of the family, and become an accountant, and get in charge of the office. And I said, I'm going to study accounting just in case, but I actually want to study politics and international relations. So I went to Kent and I talked to my teachers in the grammar school, and they helped me to convince my parents that there was no reason of, pressuring me to study something that it didn't feel me, and that I had a strong personality, and that they should not.
They should believe in what you want to do.
Yeah, they should believe in my capacity of, getting life through. So I did my BA in Kent, as I said. It was absolutely amazing in every term, culturally, educationally, etc. And I met very, very interesting professors, etc. And a very, I really like that professor, AGR Groom, which is a very important actor in the UN system. Him with Paul Taylor created the Agency on Peacekeeping and Peacemaking, and they also argued of the necessity of reforming the UN. So basically he told me, look, if you want to continue in the political science, you have to go on the new thing, the new trend. So the new trend is international security. I know you're going to go back to Cyprus and you want to resolve the conflict, etc. But the new thing is international security. So he guided me, and I did my master's in international security in Bristol. I was the second group of people in the whole of Europe that were studying international security.
Wow.
So basically it was the new thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I got my degree in 2005, and in 2006 I get to Argentina with a totally new degree that no one knew. And when I started mingling with people in the European club, and I needed to get to know people, I needed to network with the only objective of making friends, just having people to go coffee with and talking, just to, I really love my mother-in-law. I love her and I appreciate everything she did for me, but it was impossible for me to talk to her 24/7. So I needed to open up. So when I started mentioning my childhood and et cetera, I met some people that was working at the Ministry of Defense at the time, and they said to me, okay, look, what do you know? It's new here.
Unique.
And maybe it's useful for the process that Argentina is undertaking, which was basically the reform of the military and defense system. So maybe you can start working as an external consultant. And I said, okay. That's my first opportunity. So basically, my first job in Argentina was as an external consultant of the Ministry of Defense on writing reports about the logistical systems of Latin America, because Argentina was undergoing that process in order to generate more democratic and civilian control over the military institutions. So basically,
you had to write this in Spanish.
Yeah, what I did is that, at the time, Google didn't have the application of translation. So basically, I had to you know, download the web pages of the ministries and do a lot of translation on my own. So basically, I, you know, learning by myself. And I, you know, I had colleagues that really helped me, and you know, they were correcting my Spanish, etc. So I was absorbing constantly. And yeah, I wrote reports for the Undersecretary of Logistics, and then I started participating in the edition of a journal that the minister at the time, she was a woman, so I had the honor to work while she was commanding the armed forces. She, for me, she was an inspiration. She is an inspiration for me and for many young people, and especially women. And she did a great job, and she was constantly challenged by the military and the masculine
patriarchy.
You know? Yeah, you know, just an anecdote. She used to have huge meetings with the military, and you know, they start talking their staff, etc. And when she started to get bored, she used to get her nail polish, and she was like polishing her nails while, you know, they were talking. And then when she finished, she said, "Okay, bullshit is finished. Now we can talk work, because you know, I finished polishing my nails."
Oh wow!
So,
talk
so,
about
you know,
breaking the ice.
Oh my God, we were like, oh my God, we cannot believe what she's doing, because, you know, it was a whole message, you know, a very, very heavy message to do that within the military institution.
But the message is, I'm continuing to be a woman, but let's cut the bullshit and get down to business. Doesn't change the conversation. Let's carry
exactly.
on.
Exactly. So she opened up for us the possibility of, you know, a person like me, that I was young, I was 26 at the time, young, a migrant woman, and also I was the wife of a subaltern. So, you know, the wives of the military are not supposed to be seated on the decision-making tables and talking with the higher rank militaries, you know. I had to work with the bosses of my husband. So it was a very challenging thing, you know. I had to manage the situation in order not to put my husband in difficult labor situations, you know, because they could sanction him, because, or maybe I always had that in my head. But that did not stop me of being authentic, of being serious, and of showing to them that I really knew my stuff, and that
Natasha, I think everyone that succeeds, it's not what they say, it's how they say it. You've actually got to learn that way of saying exactly what you need to say, but framing it in a way that the person listening to you is not threatened, cannot misinterpret. So it's a really important skill to learn when you want to get things across, because you don't want the person listening to you to say, "Whoa, step back." You want the person listening to you to actually listen. So you want to be careful to use the right words and the right tone of voice.
Look,
which you obviously mastered, which you obviously did well with.
I think I mastered it. You know, there's always space for learning more. At the time, it was challenging because we had issues. I mean, the military institution had issues of women civilians taking decisions with them or asking them of how they do things. So it was not the issue of how did you ask them. It was the issue that you actually asked them. So they had problems with that. What to say? It was challenging, and especially when you have to say things in a language that you cannot actually manage. So you know, my fear always is not to say something that could be misinterpreted with a different purpose. So I started from that, and then I worked with another woman that I really love, and she knows it. She's my tutor. She's called Mirta Iriondo. She has a very, I don't have words to characterize her life, a very strong life. You know, she was a disappeared person because she was kidnapped by the dictatorship in Argentina. And when she was very young, she was, I think, she was 16 or 17, 18 years old. She was kidnapped and she was taken into the missing persons camps. So she managed to escape.
How many years later?
I don't really know, because, you know, when they speak about their experience, I learned that you do, I never feel empowered to ask. So basically, I always
just
listen to
listen.
her, because it's so harsh. So it's not like, oh, so tell me how, what, you know, it's very difficult. So I just created a history because of different things I listened to her say. So she went, she escaped to Sweden, and she studied mathematics and physics, and she has a PhD, and she worked in a military, she had her experience in a military factory, so very, very important. So for me, it was okay, if there is a person that I have to learn from, it's her. So she was my new boss in my second position in the Ministry of Defense. And with her, I learned a lot of things. I basically learned how to work in the public administration. She dedicated time for me to learn how to write. So she's a great teacher with huge patience. She taught me how to deal with difficult situations, how to be strong and to, you know, maintain my character, but to manage, you know, the dimension and the time, etc. And she taught me so many, you know, so many things, such as you studied international relations, but you have to learn more stuff. So you have to sit down with the engineers and you have to understand engineering. If you want to have discussions with the military, you have to learn about technology. If you want to face, you know, if you want to make changes in the system, you have to get to know about the norms, and you have to read the legislation, and you have to write the legislation, and you have to go and talk to the military, and do not have you know, any blinding
any unexpected information coming through to you.
Yeah, it's like, just get things in, analyze them, be critical always, and work. I mean, it was fascinating how we worked. It was so intense. And we did it with so much passion because, you know, during her, with her, Argentina managed to recover the plane factory, the military airplane factory, and the factory of maritime maintenance that was privatized in the 90s. So that was a huge
success
task to do, of course. And she taught me and got me into the coordination of the R&D institutions of the military institutions. So that was a huge thing for me, because, you know, in international relations, they don't teach you anything about R&D. They we talk a lot about the military and the military interventions and, you know, at that time, Iraq and Afghanistan, et cetera, et cetera. But we do not go on the operational stuff. And you know, I realize that you cannot talk about the military if you don't know about R&D, technology, production, economics, etc. So I said, okay, I have to study. So I started taking courses at the university about political economy of Argentina to understand what happened in the privatizations in the 90s, what happened during the last dictatorship to understand, you know, the different military projects and et cetera. So, you know, a whole new chapter opened up for me. From that, when Mirta left, I learned how important it is to stand up for your team, because we were left without our boss.
Hey,
so basically
yes.
We had to survive. So, this is when I said, okay, all of your past syndical experience, Natasha, in Cyprus now has to be brought up, and you have to defend your colleagues and friends in work. And we managed to defend ourselves. We lost our jobs because of a change of management, but we managed to stick in as a group, as a team. And that, I think that's the greatest thing to do. I mean, you can know a lot of things, but if you are not a good colleague and you do not
I agree with you.
Agree with your for your team, then, you know. So I realized I had some leadership capacities and qualities. So I said, okay. You know, I actually was a new girl in town, and I actually helped my friends to find jobs around. So that got my self-esteem really high, because I was realizing that I was actually integrating myself in, you know, in society in all the dimensions. From that, I went to work as a coordinator for the Vice Presidency of Technology of the National Council of Science and Technology of Argentina, which is a huge organization, a very important organization that exists since the 70s. Argentina has more than 25,000 scientists and technicians working in the many and diverse universities around Argentina, a lot of institutions and centers of R&D in different subjects. Argentina is very recognized internationally because of the knowledge that is generated. So I had the possibility to work in that organization, which is also very masculine. And, you know, if you think about researchers, normally our brain goes on, you know, Einstein and, you know, and Oppenheimer, and etc. You know, so I had a great challenge to create something new, which was to create the centers of research and transfer that would connect the university, the researchers, with the local production companies, and also involving the local provincial government. So,
but Natasha, can we fast forward, because we're running out of time?
Yeah, we are missing time.
That you were in 2021, you were appointed executive director of the National Agency of Control Materials. You were the first woman immigrant to be in Argentina and Latin America to ever have reached that level.
Yes.
and bravo to you. And from what I'm hearing, you're really well deserved. As a young woman, you battled and you worked to make yourself known within a masculine field. What would be your message to the young girls? Because what we're seeing in front of us now, because I'm getting a little bit involved in gender budgeting as well, is this is a field where there's money, okay? Money in terms of salaries as well. And it's not a field that is very female friendly. even though the woman that do it, how would what is your message to young women and older women? Because changing and recreating your life or your direction, you're never too old to do that. What would your message be?
Well, look, I had to in that last position, I had to manage 400 people, 65% of them men, very few educated, so that's a huge problem because you get disqualified all the time. So basically, when you work in the military and security in countries that need to work their gender issues and agenda, within these institutions, what you get is dequalification, delegitimization, etc. So, what we need to construct is security in ourselves. I mean, not just to, this romantic believe in yourself because you can do anything and everything is possible and nothing is impossible. Because we are human beings and we have limitations, of course, but you have to feel secure of your stuff. You have to, as we said in the beginning, you have to know who you are. So get to know who you are. And when people say to you, things that they said about me is that I was too young to have so many titles. So it's
What
like,
does that mean?
why? But I have my titles, I can show them to you, and they are certified. So then they said that because I was a woman, everyone was asking me, so did you fire a gun at some point in your life? Because if you didn't, you cannot know anything about firearms. So I said, no, thanks God, I didn't have to do it, but if I have to, there is no problem. And actually, I did because I had to undergo the requirements of acquiring the credential of a legitimate user in order to, exercise my task. So I did, and okay, nothing happened. I can do
So you
it.
can.
So I they told me that I could not get to know about firearms because you have to be like a guru. So I said, okay, I can memorize, but space in my brain is more important for other things. So I get so okay, challenge me and I'll challenge you back. So that's another thing, to be persistent, to be sure of yourself, to say, no, I don't know this. And there is no problem because we cannot know everything, That's another thing. Normally, we don't say anything. We don't say we know or we don't know. So say you what you know and what you don't know, and say, okay, if I sit down and study, and if you explain it to me, maybe I can understand it, and we can have a more progressive
Conversation.
discussion, etc. Then another thing that I say that was very important for me is that, we get the mansplaining and and everyone is asking you, so who put you here? So
Oh, yes.
who's your godfather, I mean, who's the guy who is,
Who's got your back
yeah,
that pushes
exactly.
you forward?
And I had a guy that promoted me, etc., but at the moment of more difficulties, I was left alone. So when I started having authentic decisions of the right things to do, that person left me alone because, we promote, it's like there is a culture, we promote women as long as they do what we say. When we do not accept the mansplaining, then they leave us alone. So I had to. That's a very important thing. So, what happened to women when they do not have their support from the people who promote them, especially in politics? Someone is promoting you. We have to find our way out. We have to take really important decisions. So, we have to get ourselves around. We have to take tough decisions. And the most important thing is to have people around us that really love us honestly, and they ha that we have to find love in those people that love us back with no interest in the middle. So it's very important to, you know, it's very important for women to be empowered and to get into decision and making positions, etc. But it's so fundamental for us women to find people in our life that really love us and there is no interest behind that, and that they, we know that in the bad times when we are absolutely collapsed, they are going to be in our side no matter what. So
and another lesson, another lesson I've heard from you is that if you want to get somewhere, you've got to be prepared to study and learn. You've got to fill in your information. That's not automatic and it's not a gift. You've actually
and you
got
have
to
learn about anything. You know, if you want to get there, you have to learn all the time, and you are going to be said that you don't know, and you know,
and it doesn't
okay,
matter.
And it doesn't matter. And I have to get to know my stuff. So, okay, good. You have to accept to be challenged. You have to have your arguments. You have to be persistent. As I said, you have to, you know, prepare. It's about preparing to be there. And another thing is that women, yesterday, last night, I saw a video of Mary Streep saying, women know how to talk men, men don't know how to talk women.
That's a lovely interview. I saw that too.
I really loved it. And she's right, because they do not really understand us. We understand them, but they don't understand us. So I had to be repetitive. And, you know, men really got pissed off because they say, why do you repeat this thing all the time? Why you are so, you know, your meetings are so becoming so long. Say, I repeat it just for you to understand it, just in case you don't. So basically, I believe we should not lose our language, because it's part of our identity, but we have to be sure they get the message. So it has to do with a lot of qualities and hardship. And I believe that, you know, utopias don't exist. And in order to achieve things, and in order to open up doors for other women and to inspire them, we have to say the truth. I mean, it's not, you know, a flower path. You know, it's difficult. It's very difficult.
And
we
you've
just
got to
have
walk.
To deal with
and
it.
You've got to work. You've got to work.
Yes.
With it.
Yeah. And maybe you're broken, and then you just, you know, you have to take decisions. There was a moment in my career that I had to take the decision if I had to withdraw, just for my mental health and my physical health and my family's health, you know. So I had to take the decision. And another thing we need to do is to be transparent to our kids and our family of what is going on with us. And what, you know, I mean, people say to me, so how did you do it? Because you work so many hours, and what did you do with your kids? Well, we found another way of being a family, of being together without being together. Because, you know, my husband and myself have really, we have jobs that require a lot of time outside of our house. So we taught our children to be independent and autonomous, to have, to develop their self-esteem, and to be a group. So we can exist together without being physically together.
No, I agree with you. The world has changed, and families are no longer mother at home, two children, the husband goes out to work and comes back at 5 o'clock. The world has changed, and children change with it, provided you're transparent. If you're actually transparent all the way.
Be transparent and honest. And
Because that's all they know. They don't know the traditional family, the social construct of what a family should be. I get this thing because I kept my maiden name, and my son's got his father's name. People say to me, but how's your son going to feel that you don't have the same surname as him? I said, my son knows that his mother's name is Magda Zenon. That's all that counts. He doesn't know what it should be. That is what it is for my son.
Yeah.
So the thing of not fitting into the box is nonsense.
You do your own box, you know.
Exactly.
You just open it up, or, you know.
And then you have windows so that everyone can see in and out.
Exactly.
Okay.
So So yeah,
How old are you? How old are your children now?
I have a son of 16 years old and a daughter of 10, and they are very lovely and they're very good students. They study together, actually. So, they generated like a team. So when we are not there, we know that they take care of each other.
And is your mother-in-law still living with you?
We don't live together. We moved into another place, into another house, but our children spend the whole week with her, and they love it because they want to be with their grandmother, and we have a different kind of communication and integration as a family,
But
right? So.
it's what you said, as long as you're transparent with them and as long as the lines of communication are always open, it works.
I mean,
And you've got a
it
mother-in-law, which I think is a blessing. When you've got this, I had my aunt here who had no children. So the fact that I was here as a single parent, and I would, with one of my jobs for 3 years, I was actually traveling every 6 weeks. The fact that my son knew that this auntie, this was home, wasn't his mother's home, this was home. So
yeah.
very familiar, went from school. It's a blessing to have that one person.
It's a blessing, and the learnings also are very important because I believe I always say to them, spend time with your grandmother. It gets you to know your roots because she can talk to you about her family and your grandparents' family, and you get to know who you are. I mean, for me, it was like that. I grew up with in our house, my grandmother used to live here. So I always ask her, so how was your life? So how was it when you were young, and what was your path, and how you met my grandfather, and what did you do? For me, it's so important. I mean, for you to know who you are, you have to know what your origins and your roots are. So I didn't have a problem moving around to another to or to other countries, and today they ask me, so are you applying for jobs in other countries? Yes, of course, but your family. I say, so what's the problem? Because I can be anywhere, I can be anywhere and still know who I am, and understand that life can change all the time. And another thing I say when they talk about difficulties, I say to them, imagine the people that go through war. I mean, that's difficult when you know that at any time, maybe something happens to you, you lose your family, you lose your house, you lose your personal stuff, and your life is in danger all the time. So that's tough. Difficulty for us, yeah, it's difficult, but our life is not in danger yet. So if the alert doesn't go on, then okay, just go on. But another thing to say, Magda,
And
it's so
think of a final thing to say because we need to close.
yeah, I'm finishing. Not every woman has to achieve, I mean, it's not necessary. I mean, every woman has to achieve her dreams and wishes and to feel healthy and mentally and physically and to feel satisfied. So also this thing, we have to empower women to get to decision making. Maybe she doesn't want.
I agree with
Maybe
you.
her decision making position is being a mother and to fulfill her dream. Maybe, I don't know, maybe she wants to be an artist, or like you want to, reinvent yourself in your retirement. So basically, don't tell us what to be and how to do it. Just accept that we can be good. When I was a housewife for 2 years, I was very good at it.
Now, this is, I'll end up with this because this is a conversation I've been having with some women because we're having a lot of conversations with people, women in conflict zones. And they kept on telling me, the only important woman is not important. Civil society of women is not important. What is important is getting women in decision making. I keep on telling them, firstly, how are you going to get to decision making if you're not an empowered woman? And why are the women that are not empowered not important? I've never been
But
in power. I've been very active in civil society. So why is not my opinion on anything I have to offer not as important as yours? That's a decision making. So we're all important. It's a puzzle in which we're all important and we all have our role, and there's nothing you have to do except be yourself
Look,
and believe in yourself.
we have the example of
Not
the
in the airy
mothers.
fairy, not in the airy fairy world, believing yourself, but you've got to believe you can do it and then do what you need to do it.
Yeah, the mothers and the grandmothers of Plaza de Mayo,
Oh, yes.
they were most of them housewives.
Yes. And look what they've done.
And look what they've done. You mentioned them and the whole world knows about them.
Cancer.
So it has to do with, I mean, they didn't have a decision, okay, today I have to empower myself. No, I mean, they had a cause to be there. So maybe some women feel that they want to fight for universal causes, etc., and they want to, it's not for me, it's not a sacrifice, it's something that it's absolutely passionating for me, and it's myself. So it's just contracting myself. For other women, no, and I respect that. And we have to find an equilibrium between
Exactly.
these two ideas, I mean, we have to make women empowered, even in their houses. I mean, when we are talking about domestic violence, it's about that. How do we empower women in their houses to feel secure, safe, and happy? I mean, she doesn't have to be, Mahatma Gandhi
No, she doesn't.
or
I think that's the whole message. You've got to be happy within yourself wherever you are. Okay, I agree with you. It's something I've always fought for, because my aspiration was never to be in decision making. My aspiration has always been to be where I am, which is an active member of civil society with a voice. And I
Exactly.
think that you just got to be happy in the space that you are and be as good as you can be within that space of where you are. But the message is to be at peace with yourself and content with yourself and strong within yourself. I
Yes,
am who I am wherever you put me.
the important thing is that for politics to be open to women and to be open to women with what it means to be a woman, right?
Well, yes.
So we need to have to generate openness in politics and to governmental positions and to academic positions for women to that feel empowered and want to
Yes.
go in. Because I listen now that, we as political parties in Cyprus, we want to promote women to participate in the list, et cetera, but there are no women. Well, I mean, if the political parties close up and make it a men's issue, then women, how can we, I mean,
And
we have to break structures.
it's
So
also
open
got
up.
to. It's also got to do with putting in structures, because how can I participate if there isn't good daycare? How can I participate if there isn't a system, a good public transport? So it's a whole different
Yes.
conversation. But I agree with you. Let's end on that note of that. In order for women, we've got to empower women who want to be at that level, be there, and to make a space for them. And to do it, just empower, not empower yourself. Make sure you get the information you need along the way. And don't be
Yes.
afraid to say, I don't know. I don't know.
And you make mistakes, I mean, men make mistakes also. So sometimes I say it's like when women make mistakes, it's more terrible than when
Yeah.
men make mistakes. So yeah, I mean, there are a lot of challenges. I think we've made progress. We have to work on our self-health and happiness. We need to feel happy with what we really want. If we are not happy, we cannot make change for other people. If we are
Okay.
broken, we cannot, fix up other people. So basically, that's my conclusion.
Okay. I think that's a beautiful conclusion, because I think mental health has been a real challenge in the last few years, especially with COVID. So be happy within yourself and you will get where you need to be. And have a good support system. That's so important.
Oh,
Work on your
yes.
support. Okay, Natasha, I think we could carry on forever here, but it's lovely to reconnect with you, and stay in touch.
Yep, you too.
Bye
Thank you. Bye.
bye. Bye bye.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus. Island Talks. Open. Diverse. Free.